Chapter 13. A Bible at School. Verity, it's time to get up, dear, Kara called from the stairs. It didn't take Verity long to recall that today was the day Mr. Simons had promised to help her after school. Last night at the seminar, he had apologized for being busy Monday and Tuesday. He agreed with his wife that Verity would find the study sheet really helpful, so he asked her to meet him tonight after school. For a few minutes longer, she lay in bed, contemplating what she had learned last night. In the overview of the Bible section, Mr. Henderson had dealt with each book from Genesis to Psalms. He had briefly explained the main theme from each, when it was written, and by whom. Now she felt that Joshua and Judges made a little more sense. The book of Joshua dealt with the Israelites taking possession of the Promised Land. Mr. Henderson read a quote from Genesis chapter 15, verses 13 to 21. He then explained that when God had promised the land of Canaan to Abraham and his descendants, he also told him that his descendants had to wait 400 years before they could take over the land. They had to wait until the people that lived in Canaan were wicked enough for God to want to destroy them all. When that 400 years had elapsed, the Canaanite people were indeed so wicked that God warned the Israelites that if they didn't follow his command to kill them all, the Canaanites would end up turning the Israelites away from God. Unfortunately, the Israelites didn't obey God's commands completely. Instead, they kept many of the Canaanites to be their slaves. They didn't even finish taking all of the land that God had promised them, but left many of the nations untouched. The book of Judges was all about the disastrous consequences of not obeying God's orders. Just as God had warned them, the Canaanites taught Israel all their wicked practices, which led them into idol worship. There was a continuous cycle in the book of Judges. The Israelites would forget God and sin against him, so God would send punishments, most often in the form of Israel being attacked by the other people around them. Because of this, the Israelites would see the worthlessness of their idols and cry to God for help. Then God would raise up a judge, someone to be their leader and deliver them from their enemies. But when things became peaceful and prosperous, then Israel would turn away from God and disobey his commands again. The same cycle occurred repeatedly. Mr. Henderson explained that in Judges, every person did what was right in their own eyes. Instead of allowing God's word to guide them, they determined for themselves what was right or wrong. This led to the strange accounts of people thinking they were doing right, but in reality, acting in ways that were abhorrent to God. The lesson Mr. Henderson brought out at the end of this section was that God knows what is best and he makes the rules. If God gives the command to kill others, then we would be disobeying him if we refused. If God says we are not to kill, then we would be sinning if we chose to kill. In the New Testament, God has told us through Jesus not to draw a sword against others, to love our enemies, and do good to those who hate us. On her mother's second call, Verity came back to reality. She threw off her warm blankets, sprang out of bed, and nearly fell to the ground. A funny tingle was in her leg, and for a moment it had refused to support her weight. "Silly leg," she thought, as the tingle subsided and she felt normal again. Gathering her books for school, she saw her Bible sitting on the dining room table and decided to grab it for the after-school session. Thomas saw her pop it into her backpack. "Are you really going to take that thing to school?" he questioned disdainfully. Verity grinned at him. "Yes, I think I'll take you and Hank aside and let you in on what you're missing." Looking at Thomas, Verity didn't see at first the response she had anticipated. For just a second, a deep emptiness revealed itself in his eyes, but it was quickly overtaken by defiance. "You're the one missing out, not me," he said with an air of superiority, striding off for the bus. In that brief instant, Verity had seen that Thomas's defences were not so sure and absolute as he made out. Maybe, she thought to herself, just maybe, he is reachable after all. During science class that morning, as Mr. Connor droned on about the geological record and millions of years, Verity's mind drifted back to a point Mr. Henderson had made at the seminar the night before. He had referred to a verse that said that Jesus' soul was not left in hell, but was resurrected. This had bothered her last night and was uppermost in her mind now. Why would Jesus' soul be put in hell for the 3 days he was dead, when he was the most righteous person that had ever lived? When lunch hour came, Verity excused herself from eating with Purity, Emily, and Kate, and hurried down to the library to see if she could find the passage again. Maybe she had misunderstood. She was glad she had brought her Bible today so she could figure this verse out now. Flipping quickly through the pages of her Bible, she remembered the passage was near the beginning of Acts. Soon she found it, in the second chapter, verse 31. That's interesting, she pondered to herself. Here in my NIV Bible it says that he was not abandoned to the grave. I was sure Mr. Henderson read the word hell from his. Scanning the verse quickly again, she was surprised not to see the word soul either. As she was sticking a little piece of paper in the spot to remind her to ask Mr. Simons about it later that day, she had a feeling someone was standing very close behind her. Quickly turning around, she looked up and saw that Peter was gazing over her shoulder. "Is that a Bible you have there?" he asked. "Yes," she nodded, feeling a little shy. Peter pulled a chair out and sat down beside her. "I don't think we've been introduced. I'm Peter Bryant, and I've been trying hard not to bump into you again." Verity laughed. "I'm Verity Lovell." "So, are you religious?" he questioned, motioning towards her Bible. "I'm very interested in religion," she smiled. "I've been reading the Bible a lot lately." "Really?" Peter seemed to want her to carry on. "I started out with one question, and now that I've been reading the Bible, I have at least 100 more." Peter chuckled. "So, what was your first question?" She drew in a deep breath. "Well, I just wanted to know what happens after death. Where do we go? Who goes where?" Peter shrugged. "That's easy. Good people go to heaven, bad people go to hell." "And where would I find that in the Bible?" "Gee, it's everywhere," Peter began. "Let's see if I can show you a passage." He picked up her Bible, thinking deeply. "Okay, I'm sure I remember this one." Searching through the Gospels, Peter finally came to Luke chapter 23, verses 42 to 43. "This is when Jesus was dying on the cross," he explained. "One of the thieves that was crucified with him repented and asked Jesus to remember him when he came into his kingdom. So Jesus said, 'Today you will be with me in paradise.'" Verity marvelled. "Now I'm really mixed up. Was Jesus in heaven or hell when he died?" Seeing that Peter looked confused, she tried to explain. "Well, last night at the Bible seminar that I've been going to, Mr. Henderson said that during those 3 days and nights that Jesus was dead, his soul was actually in hell. But when I looked up Acts 2 in my Bible just now, it didn't say anything about a soul or hell." Peter still looked puzzled. "What Bible seminars are these?" "Didn't you get a green flyer about a month ago called Learn to Read the Bible Effectively?" she asked, surprised. "Actually, Mr. Simons, the maths teacher, is one of the speakers. I've learned so much in just 2 nights." Peter shook his head. "I don't remember seeing a flyer like that, but then I hardly ever look at the mail. Religion is a pretty important part of my life, though." "Oh," she replied, thrilled that Peter shared her interest in religion. "So do you ever have questions about the Bible?" "You mean me, personally?" She nodded. "Not really, I guess. Our pastor does such a great job explaining everything that I don't usually have any questions." He shrugged. Feeling quite comfortable now, Verity decided to present her own case before Peter. "Well then, let me tell you what first started me thinking about all this. My dad died a few months ago." Peter looked startled. "Oh, I'm sorry to hear that." "Well, Peter, he was an alcoholic and he made life very tough for our family. He had no time for God or religion. At the funeral, the minister said my dad was probably in heaven looking down on all of us. It almost made me laugh because it would have been rather ironic. So I started reading the Bible to see if I could find out who actually gets to go where." "That is a tough one," Peter replied, shaking his head. "None of us can really say for sure who goes where, I guess. But I do know we all have an immortal soul that goes to one place or to the other." Verity was just about to ask if Peter knew where the Bible said that when she saw Hank and Thomas come in, and they were walking towards her. "Hey, Thomas, your sister has a Bible, and she's reading it with Beanpole," Hank laughed loudly. Peter turned sharply, just in time to see Hank reaching for Verity's Bible. "There's only one place for trash like this," Hank stated harshly. Before Hank could grab the Bible, Peter firmly laid his hand down on top of it. Verity felt indignation welling up within her, but keeping it in check, she asked, "How do you know it's trash? Have you ever read it?" Quite aware that he was causing a scene, Hank strolled off with Thomas, ignoring her question and broadcasting to everyone in the library, "So, Beanpole is sticking up for the minister in training. Wait till I tell all the guys." Verity felt her cheeks flushing hotly. Only her brother had teased her about training to be a minister. How could Thomas sink so low as to spout off to Hank about her? Where had his loyalty gone? A sharp sword of betrayal pierced her heart. Thomas didn't even turn to look at her. He just sauntered off with Hank down the hall. Verity didn't know what to say or where to look. But Peter spoke gently with wonder. Is Thomas your brother? She nodded miserably, wishing either her face would cool down or Peter would leave. I never would have guessed it, he went on in surprise. He's so different from you. It was suddenly all too much, and Verity's eyes misted over. You just don't understand him. No one here has given him a chance. Back home he had such good friends, and now he thinks Hank is the only one who likes him. With that she burst into tears and sprang from her chair, relieved to hear the school bell ring. Lunch was over. Feeling completely humiliated, Verity hoped she never saw Peter again. An hour ago he had been a stranger, and now she had spilled her life story to him, ending up in tears. What must he think of her? By the time the day was over, Verity had calmed down and only felt rather foolish about the whole episode. It really was almost laughable. Hopefully Peter would think so too, but she knew that she was going to feel very embarrassed the next time she met him. With her Bible in hand, she made her way to the maths office for her appointment with Mr. Simons. He was still helping one of his students, but that only took a few more minutes, and then he ushered her in. Verity, he began, we usually leave this exercise to the last night, because then we've discussed all the different study tools. This study sheet is where we put what you've learned into use. So what I'm trying to say is, I hope you won't find this too overwhelming all at once. I hope not too, she smiled. Okay, Mr. Simons went on, stacking some big heavy reference books on his desk. Do you understand that the Old Testament was first written in the Hebrew language, and the New Testament was first written in Greek? She nodded, although this was new to her. So when a translator sits down to make an English Bible from the original Hebrew or Greek, he has to make many decisions as he goes along. He has to decide how best to translate each original word into an appropriate English word. Mr. Simons paused as he tried to think of a way to simplify what he was saying. Let's say, he began, that you saw the French word garçon, and you wanted to write an English equivalent. Well, you could choose from boy, lad, guy, fellow, male. Get the point? Verity nodded. You mean there's more than one English word that I could use for garçon? Exactly, he smiled. And whatever language a translator is using, he has to make those kinds of decisions for most words. Now, another example, he carried on, just so you see why this is so important. Last night we talked about Jesus' soul being in hell for 3 days when he was dead. Verity raised her hand. Yes, he laughed. I'm so glad that you brought up that verse, Mr. Simons. I looked it up today in my Bible and it didn't say anything about soul or hell. Mr. Simons glanced at her Bible. Is that an NIV you have there? Yes. He nodded. In the Greek language there is a word Hades. In our English Bibles, the translators have at various times translated this word as grave, pit, or hell. They all mean the same thing? Yes. Every time a translator comes to the word Hades, he has to think, now, should I put in hell, grave, or pit? So here in Acts chapter 2, your NIV has accurately put grave. If it used only the words grave or pit for all the places Hades occurs, then it would greatly help to remove the misconception that there is a fiery place of torment. Verity was stunned. Are you saying there's no hell? Mr. Simon smiled. Did you know that people used to say they would hell their potatoes? They only meant that they would bury them in the dirt. Along the way, sometime during the last few centuries, hell has come to mean much more than it did in the Bible. When a person reads the word hell in the Bible, they see a very different visual picture than when they read grave or pit, yet it's all the same Greek or Hebrew word. So if I was reading a Greek Bible, Verity said slowly, then I would see just Hades in all the passages, instead of grave in some and pit in others, and... Mr. Simon was nodding. Exactly. He smiled at her with a little shake of his head. I must say, Verity, you're very perceptive. Reaching for a heavy book on top of the pile, he carried on kindly. There's a lot more I could say about hell, but let's save that for later. Right now, let's see if you can figure out soul. As he opened up the big book, he said, I don't want to scare you with these reference books. Yes, they're big, but if you can make your way around a dictionary, you'll have no trouble figuring out how to use these. I'm sure after finishing this study sheet, you'll be a pro. This book here is called Strong's Exhaustive Concordance, he explained, showing her various pages. It lists every single word in the King James Bible alphabetically. You would use this book if you wanted to find out what a word from the Bible meant in its original language. Pushing it in front of her, he nodded. Now, see if you can find the word soul. Verity found it easily. It really was just like a dictionary. Every phrase in the Bible that had the word soul in it appeared chronologically underneath the word soul, all the way from Genesis to Revelation. Mr. Simons showed her the little numbers beside the phrases, and then he turned to the back of the book to what was called a Hebrew dictionary. There was also a Greek dictionary for the New Testament words. It was easy to then use the number given for soul and find the definition. Under the number 5315 was the Hebrew word nephesh. "Wow!" Verity exclaimed, reading the definition. "A breathing creature, appetite, beast, body, breath, dead, desire. It goes on and on." She paused, rather puzzled, searching over the list a few times. "But nowhere does it say anything about the soul being immortal." Mr. Simons nodded. "When you look up soul in the Greek, the definition will give the impression that the soul is immortal, because that is what Mr. Strong believed. Just keep in mind that while these definitions list the ways in which each word is used, they also include a personal opinion on the meaning. Be careful to examine the passages that are listed. That is the way to determine how the Bible actually uses or defines a word." With a smile, he reached for the second book. "Now, I don't want to confuse you," he began, "but I want you to be able to use this book as well." He showed her the cover of the second book. "This is Englishman's Hebrew Chaldee Concordance of the Old Testament. Don't be scared by the long name. It's simply a book that lists all the places where a particular Hebrew word occurs, regardless of how it's been translated into English." Seeing her puzzled brow, he tried to explain very carefully. "This book will give all the places where nephesh is used in the entire Old Testament, regardless of whether the translators have used soul, life, or creature in English. Do you follow me?" Verity sighed. "Maybe when you show me, I'll understand." Mr. Simons chuckled. "It is a lot to take in all at once." Opening it up, he explained, "Now, I'll use the same number we found for soul in Strong's Concordance to find nephesh in here." He turned to the spot and showed Verity the difference between the two books. Strong's listed phrases with only the word soul in them. In Englishman's, under the word nephesh, there were many more phrases, some with soul, some with life, some with body, and several other related words. "So in Englishman's," he stated, "we have a much more complete picture of how the Hebrew word nephesh is used in the entire Old Testament." Verity skimmed the pages quickly. She could hardly wait to begin. "Now the third book," he said, motioning to it, "is just like Englishman's, except it's for the New Testament Greek words. After you've done this investigation into what a soul really is, we can meet again if you'd like." "That would be fantastic," said Verity. "This is a much quicker way to answer my question than reading through the whole Bible." "Yes, in some ways," Mr. Simons replied, "but this is like using a magnifying glass to see the details on a snowflake. A detailed study like this will give you some very important information, but reading the whole Bible gives you the big picture. That will always be the most valuable thing to do. Oh, and one more thing," he said, picking up some photocopied sheets from his desk. "Since we don't have enough of these reference books to let everyone in the seminars borrow them, we've photocopied the relevant pages. You might as well take these photocopies home with you. Then you can highlight verses you find helpful and refer to them easily if you need to." Verity felt quite excited as they headed out to drive home. This was like detective work. She was about to do some deep investigation. Perhaps she would finally find the answer to her very first question.